welcome back to Data Protection Gumbo. I am your host, Demetrius Malbro, and today we have an exciting episode lined up for you, and this is hopefully an episode to help you as a board-level director, C-suite, or even a member of the cybersecurity team, compliance, governance, and regulatory requirement team as well. So I think this will have a broad-reaching outfit across the entire data protection gumbo industry. I want to welcome Richard Holm, who guides clients in preparing for, responding to, recovering, and learning from cybersecurity and privacy incidents. And he is over at Clark Hill, and he is going to school and educate us and just give us more clarifying information around this new SEC rule. And we will all walk away feeling a lot more informed as well. So, Rick, welcome to the gumbo. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing great. I'm doing well. Thank you.
You want to start off by giving everyone some information about Clark Hill and also what your role is there.
Yeah, absolutely. So Clark Hill is a national law firm and, you know, full service law firm. We do everything from real estate to litigation to my practice area, which is the cybersecurity and privacy. Mm-hmm. As far as what I do there, I'm a senior attorney. I sit in the Chicago office, and really I help companies kind of react to, prepare for, and as you said, learn from cybersecurity incidents. So if there's a ransomware incident or an email compromise and you have to bring in outside counsel to help, I'm the one that gets the phone call.
And I am really surprised that you even have time to do this episode right now, because I'm sure you can attest to being very busy now due to ransomware.
Yeah, you know, it seems like we got a nice little, I hate to say vacation, but a little vacation from ransomware when the Ukraine-Russia war kind of first started. And it's really come roaring back and back to a frequency that probably exceeds what we saw before that.
Okay. Yeah. So sounds like maybe some nation state, lack thereof, nation state type attacks, or maybe things are ratcheting up because of that. Or it seems like there was a lull, but now it's increasing, especially artificial intelligence is also definitely not making things easier. It's increasing in sophistication as far as the bad actors there, leveraging ChatGPT and other AI-based type systems in order to get more sophisticated with phishing emails, et cetera. But let's talk about the SEC rule, the new rule that was instituted, but not too long ago, around cybersecurity incidents and risk disclosures.
Yeah. So to break it down into kind of its simplest form, how I like to think about it is there's kind of two different segments to it, right? And we can get much, much more granular, but there, in my view, there's kind of two general segments. The first one is kind of disclosures that are required based on a cybersecurity incident occurring. So that's one kind of section. And then the other section is routine disclosures, routine quarterly disclosures around your cybersecurity program and around the governance of that cybersecurity program and how the board interacts with that cybersecurity program.
And as far as, so I know they mentioned that you have maybe up to 4 days in order to disclose, and there's also some confusion around what's a material incident and the materiality of it. How does someone make that distinction between the event being material or not?
And that's really the magic phrase, materiality. And so to kind of take a step back, it's not 4 days after the incident occurs.
Okay.
It's not 4 days after the email compromise. It's not 4 days after the ransomware kind of encrypts your systems. It's 4 days after you make that determination of materiality. And so that actual determination, there's a financial aspect to it. The SEC has come out and said, hey, look, it's not just based on whether or not you're losing enough money to make it material, meet that materiality threshold. There's also things like harm to reputation,
right?
How much customer data might be affected, the type of customer data that might be affected. So there's other things that you have to think about outside of that. What normally would just be a pure financial determination of whether it hits that threshold of materiality.
Now, is that something that an attorney can help them figure out, or is that all internal, that they have to decide internally with the board of directors, the C-suite, and everyone on the executive leadership team, okay, let's review the incident and the timeline and everything that occurred. Like, I'm sure it's their responsibility. Is that something an attorney can help with?
Yeah, it's an all hands on deck kind of situation.
Okay.
Where mm-hmm. you've got your outside counsel working with your CFO, working with, you know, whoever leads your cybersecurity program and your incident response. It takes all of them sitting at the table, kind of discussing whether this meets the materiality trigger or not. And if not, why not? Because you know, at day two of a ransomware incident, it doesn't meet a materiality threshold. Mm-hmm. You know, facts change as the forensic evidence, you know, is gathered and analyzed. And so even if it doesn't meet that threshold on day two, it might meet that threshold on day three. And so it's really everybody has a part to play in that determination.
Okay. And does cybersecurity or cyber insurance also play a role in this, or is that something that is kind of a myth that you should or you shouldn't have it? I'm not quite sure. Like, should you have it or should you not have it?
So I'm party biased.
Okay.
Full disclosure, before I worked at Clark Hill, I worked at Beazley for a couple of years, which is a huge cyber insurance company. So yes, you should, if you're a business that has any exposure, which every business does, you should definitely have some form of cyber insurance. What we've seen is, especially if you look at some of the 8K filings, which mm-hmm. is the way that you have to kind of disclose whether or not you've had a material incident. If you take a look at those filings, a lot of them do reference that, hey, look, we suffer costs related to this incident, but they're going to be offset because we do have cyber insurance to cover those costs.
Mm-hmm.
So cyber insurance does fit into that materiality, especially on the financial aspect.
And if a CISO, a chief information security officer, may not be as clear around, and I'm going back to once again, the whole, when is a cybersecurity incident material? Like, I don't think we can stress that more. Is it when this happens or that happens? And I just want to make sure that the listeners are clear and they walk away really understanding what that is, because I'm sure there's a few executives out there that may end up struggling with figuring that component out.
And to be 100% honest, it's not super clear. And it's still being hashed out as more and more organizations file these 8Ks, and we see regulatory agencies say, yes, you were correct in your kind of determination of whether or not that's material or not. That irons out kind of the left and right lines of what exactly materiality means. And so mm-hmm. it's still relatively unclear. And to kind of highlight that, pretty much every 8K we've seen filed since this regulation went through has mm-hmm. even still, it's publicly disclosed the incident. They've come out and said, hey, this isn't a material incident. So even ransomware matters, they're saying, hey, you know, we've had, you know, a million customer records affected. We couldn't operate for 2 days, but now we're back up and running. Not material mm-hmm. because cyber insurance is going to help us out on the costs. And so it's not clear exactly at what point that materiality kind of triggers. What we're seeing are organizations are being a lot more proactive about disclosing events. I think mm-hmm. part of that is the organization thought process is, if I disclose this event, say it's not material, the SEC comes back and says, yes, it is material. never I disclosed it. I just have to update my materiality finding, which isn't, in the grand scheme of things, isn't a big deal. Whereas if I do not disclose it, the SEC investigates, says, yes, you have to disclose that it's material, then we're going to have a bigger hit to the stock price, a bigger issue down the road.
Yeah, and I've looked at a few of these AKs, and it seems that companies are kind of following the same script. Maybe they're copying and pasting out of someone else's and just modifying on this date, right? Name of our company detected an unauthorized occurrence on a portion of its, you know, of our IT systems. And then we're investigating with some leading external cybersecurity experts and activating our incident response plans, shutting down some systems. And I mean, it's just like maybe cookie cutter verbiage in order to keep the SEC kind of off your backs. And I'm not sure if we're going to be flagged for saying all of these acronyms. You know, they are targeting chief information security officers now. And I think it was SolarWinds who's probably in a battle right now between SolarWinds and CISO. And I think things are going to get a little more sticky as far as some of these rules and regulatory compliance regulations are concerned. Do you have any stories around any that you can disclose from different types of events, material, cybersecurity incidents?
So I think really some of the interesting ones, the Microsoft one is interesting.
Yeah, Microsoft email compromise, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so if everybody kind of to refresh your memory, that was basically, I think, a Russian threat actor, and they were state-sponsored, and basically they used a password spraying attack to get into a test tenant that had been overprivileged, and they were able to access the email inboxes for senior Microsoft leaders for a period of time. And essentially what Microsoft did is they came out in their AK and said, hey, this is absolutely not material, but we're still disclosing it. And right. I think that goes to the point of we're not necessarily seeing a lot of material incidents, but we're seeing a heck of a lot more transparency and disclosure around what's happening on the incident side. And
yeah.
And so that's the Microsoft example in a nutshell.
Yeah. So I guess it's fair to say be safe than sorry and go ahead and submit information on the 8K if you do have something that goes on that seems to be an incident and you're trying to figure out whether it's material or not. Go ahead and work with the executive team and the board in order to get something out just to cover your bases. Be smart.
Yeah, I think especially if you're hit with like downtime from a ransomware attack. I mean, and so in the presentation, we went through probably like four or five examples of ransomware incidents where the 8K was filed to disclose the incident. And only one of those said, hey, this is a material incident at the time. And the reason was that they were down for like an entire week or something, and they couldn't take payments or something like that.
Yeah.
But once they recovered, they were the company. I think it was the Vans one, the VHF one.
Yeah, VF Corp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they couldn't. And the reason it was a material it hit that materiality threshold is they just couldn't conduct business for like an entire week during the holiday season. But once they passed that and were able to process orders again, they came out in another filing and said, hey, this no longer hits that materiality threshold. And so I think what we're seeing is anytime there's a ransomware event that ends up in prolonged downtime that the public notices, then companies are saying, okay, it's going to get out there that we had a ransomware event.
Mm-hmm.
Really does us no harm to be on the safe side, file an 8K, disclose it, even if it doesn't hit that materiality threshold.
Right, right. It looks like VF Corp. So they amended the 8K that was filed and said that, you know, we currently estimate that the threat actor stole personal data of approximately 35.5 million individual consumers. However, VF does not collect or retain in its IT systems any consumer social security numbers, bank account information, or payment card information. And so it's the world is, data is really sticky nowadays, and everyone's creating data. So we definitely have to be careful how we operate, especially when we are retaining any type of data nowadays. And that's why I am so excited that you're here. And Rick, what advice would you give to, let's say, just the entire cybersecurity team? Let's say something happened and they are rallying around in a war room somewhere trying to figure things out. What advice would you give, let's say, the leader within that situation on how to be clear and how to kind of make a decision really quick before they go through some of the stressful things of not knowing exactly what to do?
Yeah. So to take a step back, and I know preparation is key. So like when we're talking like incident response plans with clients now, we're telling them that, hey, this has to be an appendix where you have some guidance on what materiality means or how you're going to make that decision, at least, and who the people that contribute to that decision are. So the goal is that when you're in that room, when you're sweating bullets, when you're tired, you're not facing this decision for the first time, that you've talked through some of these scenarios and have at least an idea of how to approach that decision. And if we fast forward to when the event actually happens, there's somebody leading the incident response. I think from my perspective, it's important to for that person to be able to take in advice from all, like from different sectors. So you're not just taking advice from IT. You're actually, you have somebody from HR who's able to tell you how this is playing with employees, when we should issue communications to employees. You've got somebody from the PR side that can tell you, hey, this is, you know, our website's down. We need to communicate something to our customers. The incident response isn't just you giving me a call and me and forensics helping you out. There's other aspects to it that can be as important going forward.
It looks like, so during the incident response, that individuals or organizations, the CISO and the entire team that's working on the incident should begin discussing whatever that materiality determination is, like immediately. And maybe even start documenting, like, what have they found, some of the discussions that they were having, the timeline, and maybe some of the additional information that they need to make that determination. So this is not a game, right? You really have to make sure that you have everything in place so you can be spot on when you're getting ready to report this.
Yeah, and I think this determination, more so than some of the other incident response aspects, you have to approach it like a regulator is going to take a look at your actions and say, okay, so you made that materiality determination on the fifth day of the incident. Why did it take you so long? What new information did you get from the third day when you could have made that determination? And based on that, you want to be able to say, hey, look, we sat down on the third day, we said we were still missing this piece of information that would kind of tip us into the materiality determination. And so you just want to be able to defend your record and defend yourself as to why you waited to make that determination.
Yeah. And maybe one final question here, Rick, as far as board involvement and oversight, because I also read a study on Wall Street Journal that says that the board of directors, they are now more privy into cybersecurity. And so they are now forced to learn more about cybersecurity and also maybe responsible for finding someone within the organization to take full responsibility, like a chief information security officer or CIO or someone who has that authority to own the security. And if it's not the CEO, it has to be someone, right? But how should corporate boards approach their oversight responsibilities regarding cybersecurity, especially in light of this SEC rule?
Yeah, so for the SEC rule, one draft kind of version of it had required boards to disclose their cybersecurity expertise. or their level of expertise.
Okay.
And so it's that wasn't included in the final rule, and I think that's probably a good thing. Really, it's not about being like a cybersecurity expert or technically deep in the weeds. It's about having an open line of communication to whoever's leading the security group and getting input from them as far as, hey, look, these are the threats we're facing. These are our weak spots. This is what we're doing to address those gaps that I see in our cybersecurity defenses. And the board has to be able to kind of take that in and look at that from a holistic like risk perspective and kind of determine if the company is doing what's necessary or not doing what's necessary. I think gone are the days, and I can remember when I started my career when boards didn't want to hear anything about cybersecurity or incident response or incidents. It was like kind of a just go handle that. And I think those days are long gone. The board has to be involved in that.
Yeah, it was all technical IT stuff. And I don't want to hear about switches and routers and segments and you know, breaches. And no, just handle it, right? So those days are definitely gone. And let's begin to wrap up here. And as far as Clark Hill, any information that you would like to kind of provide to the Data Protection Gumbo audience as you are closing out here, you can do that at this time.
Yeah. So at Clark Hill, you know, our groups handle thousands of cybersecurity events. We've done it for years, decades. And if you ever have any questions or you just want to have a conversation about these regulations, you want to have a conversation about cybersecurity or privacy or anything like that, you know, you should feel free to reach out to me, and I'm happy to have a quick conversation and kind of discuss whatever is on your mind. We don't have to have a formal engagement or anything like that. You know, I like just meeting people in the cybersecurity industry. So you should feel free to reach out to me.
Nice. Well, you have that offer to reach out to Rick. So please don't bombard him too much because he will say, you know what, I shouldn't have went on that Data Protection Gumbo podcast. And this guy just put me out there. But well, reach out to me and I'll pass the message along to Rick as well. And so before I let you go, I want to let everyone know about the Backup and Recovery Professionals group that I run on LinkedIn. There's almost 26,000 professionals in that group, and we have great conversations around protecting data, securing data, storing data as well. So be sure to go on LinkedIn and check that group out. So Rick, once again, thank you so much for being a guest and providing all of your insights around the SEC rule and helping the audience determine and understand materiality and when to disclose and just some of the ramifications around doing that correctly or not doing that at all. So thank you again. And I want to tell everyone out there to stay safe, back up your data, and we'll see you next time.